You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Hi, Rob Hollis.
Hi, Michael Rosenbaum.
Good to see you, my friend. Always a treat. Big guest. When I say big, I actually mean big.
Literally and figuratively.
Yes, I mean physically. This guy is a presence.
Yeah, you guys took your shirts off and tried to flex.
Well, I took my shirt off.
Oh, yeah, he had his on, but...
I actually took my shirt off. Which
his
I think
his arm was the size of your body.
Dude, his torso is bigger than my entire body. This guy is Dave Bautista. He was a professional wrestler. You know him in his wrestling days.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about everything. How we met, which I'm surprised.
That he remembered?
Well, yeah. He did an episode of Smallville, and he did Guardians with me, and just a amazing guy. Some of these stories that he tells, like he hasn't told one of these stories, which you'll hear, which was just like, holy shit. He like got in a fist fight at Fuddruckers. Cheese and rice, man. That was some intense stuff. He has got a heart of gold. He looks out for his friends. He could kick your ass, my ass for sure. I think you're going to love this interview. This is Dave Bautista.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
You know, we play a little music here. We have a band we call Shit Sandwich, and then it became The Sandwich because I don't think people wanted to book us. And then they heard us and they said, yeah, you should have just kept the title.
Yeah.
It was fitting. But we play like, you know, I'm a big 70s fan. I grew up in southern Indiana, so we like a little southern rock mixed in with 80s, a little taste of the Wallflowers in the 90s, Eagles-esque.
Sure. Where are you from in Southern?
I was born in New York. I grew up in Southern Indiana.
Which part?
Evansville.
Evansville.
Did you ever wrestle in Evansville?
Hell yeah.
Robert Stadium?
Yeah, I don't know.
That was the big place. Or right now they have the Honda.
I don't remember. I was there more at smaller like high schools and stuff. Because I did Ohio Valley Wrestling in Louisville, Kentucky.
Was that pretty intense?
Yeah, it was. But they... You know, they paid me to be there. It was like I had a job to work out.
How old were you?
30.
That's a pretty good job. Wrestling, making
pretty
money.
Good job, yeah. I was bouncing before that. That was like right when I got into wrestling. They paid me to go to train there. So I was there for 2 years.
Did you like Indiana?
Yeah, I did.
You did?
Yeah. Why'd you hate it?
No, I loved Indiana. I loved it. I was kind of a nerd, though, growing up. I wasn't pop. Were you popular?
No. I think I could have been.
What is that? I think we all could have been.
Well, I think I was just such an introvert. You know, I was such an introvert and I was so socially awkward that I just never, I never applied myself to being a popular.
Really?
No, I was really athletic. I was good at sports. I just...
Just quiet?
I just always felt out of place, man. I just never felt like I fit in, so I wasn't that type of kid.
Are you still that guy?
Yeah, I'm still that guy.
Do you still feel that?
Yeah.
In a way?
Yeah. No, not in a way, completely.
Well, why is that? Because I feel the same way where people are like, oh, you're so confident. You go out, you can talk to anybody, but there's some weird thing where I feel like I have to sort of be the center of attention sometimes because then I'll be accepted.
Right. Huh, I don't feel that way at all.
So you just go in a room and do the opposite.
I don't like being the center of attention at all.
You don't like being the center of attention?
Not at all.
I will tell you this. You're one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
Okay.
And looking at you, I'm sure you heard this, but like you look at this. Jonathan, your friend over there who's known you since a kid. Was he always nice? You can just nod. You're not mic'd. Yeah?
For sure.
Always a nice guy. Nice. Jonathan wouldn't hang out with an asshole this long.
No.
But you know, you're tatted up. You're a big dude. You could probably, I've read shit about you. You could easily hurt someone if you needed to. You have when you needed to. I read that too. But you know, how do we meet?
Well, we met in a True Religion store. That's the first time we met because I came up and said, hey.
Yeah, that's right.
You're Michael Rosenbaum. You played Lex Luthor
when
on Smallville.
When was that?
It was forever ago. It was before I got into acting. It was like, I think I might have still been wrestling, but I saw you. And I was excited to see you, and I was like awkwardly introduced myself and said I was a fan,
and I was cool.
I also did an episode of Smallville, but we didn't have any scenes together.
Right.
It was a very small part for me. It was actually one of my first acting gigs. I just wanted to be there because it was Superman related.
You love Superman?
I wasn't because at that time I wasn't at all interested in acting. I just wanted to wrestle. And they said, "What'd you do this part?" And I said, "Hell yeah!" And I basically went and just played myself. I played a professional wrestler who was disguised as an alien. That's pretty much what the character was.
And you loved it.
I loved being on the show. I didn't love. I wasn't in love with acting at that point. I just wasn't interested, to be honest.
Well, go back for a second, because it was years later. Recently, it was a couple months ago, we were at a convention, mm-hmm. and some woman came up to me and goes, hey, who's working at the convention, goes, hey, Dave Bautista would like to say hello to you. And I go, nah, he's probably, I know we've met, but I was like, right. you know, I don't really, it's got to be Michael Rooker that he worked with. It's got to be Rooker. He's not, it's a mistake. Rooker's God, here.
I hope they're not. You know.
He doesn't want to see Jew Rosenbaum here.
I hope they're not mistaking me for Rooker.
Because there's nothing more embarrassing than going up to you and then going, so there's been a problem, mistake here. You're not Rooker. And so I said it a few times. She goes, no, he made it clear. He wants to. And I went back and you were at this little booth privately signing. You just had gotten there and you go, hey, man, I just wanted to say hello. I heard you were here.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, immediately, like, God, fucking, I love this guy. Who does that?
That's so weird to me that you wouldn't think that I was, like, I wanted to say hello to you. I knew you were there, and we were getting ready to leave, and I was like, I didn't want to leave without saying hello.
But I think that's such a beautiful thing.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
I mean, I immediately came home, and I told my friends, like, dude, he didn't have to do this. There's a lot of actors who I've met, who I've seen, when I said, hey, could you get Michael Rosenbaum over here? I'd love to say hello to him. They just don't do that in Hollywood.
No. Well, I don't live in Hollywood.
You live, where do you live?
I live in Tampa, Florida.
Well, there you go.
I'm far removed from home. I never felt comfortable out here. I always felt like, I don't know, I always felt like I was working out here, you know, and I don't like to feel like that. I like to be a normal person. I like to live a normal life. And
What do you notice about when you're here? What's the feeling? Do you have a certain feeling of like, this is bullshit, I'm going from meeting to meeting, I'm not myself?
I'm always myself. I don't put on an air for anybody. I always try to be myself. But I always feel like I'm being judged. I also feel like when I talk to people, it's not, and you know, it's not your, you know, hey, how you doing? It's so what are you doing? What are you into now? What's next?
That's always what it is, man.
I don't like that. I just want to be like,
that's the thing, whether it's an agent or it's someone, what are you up to now? What are you working on?
Yeah.
And it feels so disingenuous. It feels like, right. And almost you feel compelled for a long time. I felt compelled to just be like, oh, well, I got this movie coming out and I got this, because if you don't, then you're nobody. But that's not how it really is. You have to be comfortable with yourself. So I understand what you're talking about. But I sort of react where now people say, hey, what are you up to? I'd say, hey, you know, I'm just enjoying life.
Yeah.
Even if I got stuff going on, I just say, hey, I'm just enjoying life. I'm trying to find my purpose. I'm trying to be happy. I'm trying to live.
Yeah. I don't find it easy to talk about myself either. I'm not a self-promoting person. Like I've tried to intentionally make more of an effort to be self-promoting on my social media, because I'm just not good at it. I'm not good at selfie taking.
But that's who you are.
But I want to grow. I want to take a step up. I want to move up in this industry too. So I try to make an effort, but it is against my instincts.
You know what's funny is, as you talk, since this podcast, I don't know if you noticed, but my energy has sort of gotten, I'm not going to say lower, but in a good way, I've gotten more comfortable. You put me at ease a little bit.
Thanks,
with
man.
Your disposition, my friend.
Thank you.
You're just like, you're real. And sometimes I feel like, oh, I got to talk to somebody. You know, I got to have an energy. And
I'm a monotone person.
I don't think I am.
No.
Dave, would you say I'm not that guy, Jonathan?
Yeah, no, you're definitely an energetic person.
I think I am.
It's good. It feels good. It's a good.
It feels
energy.
Good. You
it's
like
a,
it?
It's a positive energy.
So we're balancing each other.
Yeah.
You with your monotone, me with my high energy.
Yeah. Even like likewise, the first time we met, you didn't know me from anybody, and you just were very like nice and pleasant, and
you remembered that.
I remember that was first impressions to me are everything.
Everything.
Yeah, and then it's just, you know, it's one of those things, man. At that point, I was just a fan coming up to say hello. And people, I really think you can judge a person by the way they treat their fans.
I think you judge a person by the way they treat everyone.
Yeah, true.
And, you know, it's for me, it's like my parents may not have been the best parents, but I always had respect when I met anybody. My dad go, oh, my God, you'd flirt with the dude who at the cashier at Burger King. I was like, hey, man, how's your day?
Yeah.
Just that's kind of who I am.
It's a very true statement, but at the same time, you have to look at people who have been in that spotlight, and they start to change. They start to get jaded, and they start to treat the fans, differently. You know, they kind of shut them out a little bit, and I don't like that.
Do you see that?
I see it all the time.
And how does it make it to people that you work with, people that you work closely with, people that you probably don't even want to mention on this podcast? Yeah. You've seen it and just shake your head, go, fuck.
Yeah. And I have to say that on very few occasions, so I'm very lucky. I've had a lot of very great experiences with great people in this industry. And I've had only a few really dealt with a few bad eggs.
Have you ever, by the way, Dave Bautista, thanks for allowing me to be inside of you today. I almost forgot to say that. That's how we do it. That's how we roll. Rob, you think you were waiting for it, weren't you?
It was.
Yeah. It's kind of
even,
a thing.
We're not even recording yet.
Oh, now we're recording. So Dave, none of that was recorded. Right. You talk about just how you respect people and I read somewhere where you really respected your parents because they worked really hard and—
My mother.
Your mother you respected.
Yeah. My father has not been a part of my life. And I don't want to get on, a negative. He's never been a part of my life. He's never been supportive of me. But my mother, on the other hand, has always been—
Wonder Woman.
She has been, man. She's the reason I am who I am. My mother is a person of very high standards, high dignity. She's a very gracious person. She's a very giving person. She's a very liberal, free-thinking person. It's a conversation for me. And some people find it odd, but they look at me and see that I'm, a big athletic person. But I was raised by a single lesbian. It took a single lesbian to make a man.
Wow.
But she's a very strong woman, and I just love her and respect her. And
I mean, how important is it? And you could go on about that. It's like, people in their lives, if you don't have a role model, mm-hmm. if you don't have somebody to look up to, you're a product of your own environment. I believe that. I believe nurture over nature in a lot of ways. I mean, you're dealt with certain things biologically, but I also think that with good parenting, with good role models, with good people around you, they kind of make you who you are.
Definitely.
Definitely.
I believe that as well. People can become products of their environment, good or bad.
Because you had a tough childhood.
Yeah. And again, my mom was always that, she was that beacon. She was that, she was the angel on my shoulder, telling me, and sometimes, beating me.
Really?
Into heading the right direction. Yeah. She was not afraid to get physical. And she knew sometimes she had to.
Were you a big guy then?
I was a big, big kid. I was bigger than my mom when I was probably 12 years old. Like I said, my mom, single mom. She was working most of the time, and we grew up in the ghetto. See, we were running the streets. In D.C., back and forth between D.C. and San Francisco.
But how does she do that? How does she work and then able to get your shit together?
Exactly.
What were you doing at that age?
Yeah, exactly.
What trouble were you getting into?
I was stealing and fighting and going out in the middle of the night, just sneaking out. Running in San Francisco, running with gangs. We were around a lot of violence. Even to when I was a teenager, I was still getting in a lot of trouble. A lot of fights. I fought a lot when I was young.
Well, how'd that get started? Because you were big and people would start fights with you?
No, I don't know. I think a lot of times when you're in the wrong environment, a bad environment, you're around, other people that are also in bad environment. There's nothing positive going on, man.
There's nothing to do. There's no outlet.
People are out looking for something to do, something to get into.
And Dad wasn't there.
My dad wasn't there ever. And we just, young and in the wrong environment.
I mean, don't you think that had a lot to do with it? Like he sort of, you felt abandoned and you had a lot of anger towards that?
Maybe it's just weird. Here's the thing. I don't know if I did. And the reason why is because I don't really know what it ever felt like to have a dad. So it's not like he was there and then he wasn't.
Right.
So I didn't miss it. I didn't have, but I definitely didn't have that guidance. And I don't know exactly what that guidance would have been. I don't know how the situation would have been if it would have been different with my parents together, but it just wasn't possible for them to be together. My mom's a lesbian. She was in love with a woman, and that's just the way that went. She didn't like my dad. He wasn't a good father. So they just went their separate ways, and that was actually how my mom ended up in San Francisco. She said she wanted to get as far away from my father as she could.
Jesus, well, she did it, right?
Yeah, and so anyway, that was it.
Did he flip out when she told him she was a lesbian?
No. It was just a very, no, they were, it was one of those things. They weren't together my whole life. I remember them trying to make it work like one time, which lasted like a couple months. And other than that, they didn't really get a divorce until like well into the 80s.
Really?
Because they never had that type of falling out.
Right,
it wasn't, And they really only got a divorce because my dad wanted to get remarried. So otherwise,
so they'd still be married.
Yeah, they'd still be married.
Jesus Christ.
And they actually still have, you know, they have a very functional relationship. They still get along with each other.
But you won't talk to them.
No, just because for a lot of different reasons, you know, and I think the reason I really stopped talking to him, just kind of cut him out of my life, is because he wasn't a good father to me, which bothered me a little bit. But what really bothered me the most was that he didn't even try to be a good grandfather to my children. And then when he wasn't there for them, I just,
you have like, two grandkids?
No, I have more, actually.
You have more now?
Yeah. That's a whole different story, too.
But yeah, you have enough.
My one daughter, yeah, she's a troubled child. Well, she's not a child anymore. She's a grown woman. But yeah, but she started young, and she's been having kids. It's in a strange relationship, so.
Right, you have a 26-year-old, 28-year-old?
Yeah, 27.
That's another story. But
I apologize. She's 28 now.
28?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've read so much shit. Like, I mean, here you are as a teenager getting in fights, stealing, no guidance, your mother trying to give you whatever she can. She's working her ass off. People died in your front lawn. Is this true?
It wasn't technically our front lawn. So there was an alley right next to our house, and this guy got killed, like, right in the alley. So he was kind of sitting there on the gate.
You saw him.
Everybody did. It was like the whole neighborhood was there seeing this guy.
I mean, that's got to be this. What does that feel like? I mean, I guess for a tough kid, for me, I would have shit my pants because I didn't see that shit when I was growing up.
You know, it's weird. My mother and I have completely different recollections of it. And I don't remember. My mom says that she was freaked out, but she was more freaked out that we weren't bothered by it. It was kind of really late at night. And we, because everybody was outside, had come outside and was gathered around this, we took advantage and went out and played with our friends at night because we thought it was cool to be out at night playing with our friends. And we weren't at all bothered by this dead guy next to our house. And that was soon after that, my mom packed us up and we took off. We headed to San Francisco.
My neighborhood would have shut the fuck down, Dave. Yeah.
No, it just, I mean.
You saw stuff like that. You saw so much, so many different things that this didn't shock you that much.
No, it didn't. You know, it was a lot of violence at the time. There was a lot of, D.C. was a very violent city. As far as I can remember, even into the 90s, it was very violent. And it was not uncommon to wake up and, you know, somebody's been shot, somebody's been killed over their shoes.
Did you feel you had a death wish?
Not at all.
You didn't feel like, see, I think growing up, like I was depressed at times and I would get really dark and I was like, I just always felt like I was never going to live that long.
I don't think I had a death wish. I think I thought, like most kids, to think that they're never going to die.
Really? You felt the opposite of me. You felt like, I'm going to live forever. I could do whatever.
Nothing bad's going to happen to me. That happens to everybody else. It doesn't happen to me. I don't know. I guess you become numb to things, man. You see them so often, and they're just not, you know, they become commonplace, and you just don't get freaked out by it.
So fighting doesn't even bother you anymore. Someone, like when someone bothers you, when you get pissed off.
Yeah. I don't like to fight.
Yeah,
I feel horrible after. I will fight. I mean, I will fight to prove a point, but I feel horrible after.
But what will start? We'll get that feeling inside you that like I got to kick this guy's ass. What would push your buttons?
Well, it would take somebody being real disrespectful, and typically it would take somebody being disrespectful to someone I cared about.
So if they called you a pussy, that wouldn't do it.
It would depend on who the guy was. You know, if the guy was my size and felt like he was, you know, he's testing me, and yeah, we'd probably get in a fight. If it was a smaller guy who I felt like,
buddy,
and I'm not gonna
I don't want to do this.
Michael said he wants to try to fight you.
Hey Dave, you're a pussy.
I've been in, like, I bounced for 13 years, man, so I've had all kinds of, you know, guys with, you know, beer egos, muscles come up and start
you ever lose a fight?
No, but I've had some rough ones. I got in a fight with this kid who I didn't. It was like happened so fast. It escalated so fast. I didn't even know I was going to be in a fight. But he hit me with this wet floor sign.
What?
That knocked me so silly. We got in a fight in this Fuddruckers hamburger place.
Fuck. Were you there, Jonathan?
No, it was with my girlfriend. And it happened so fast.
What? How did it? Do you remember how it started?
Yeah, this guy was. He was looking at my girlfriend, and I looked over at him.
When was this?
It was 95, 6-ish, around there. But anyway, this kid's looking at my girlfriend. I look over at him, like, you know, why is he just being so disrespectful? And his friend, says something to him, you know, that I'm looking at him. And he goes, I don't give a shit. I'll punch him in his face three times before he hits me once. Because he was much smaller than me. And I was like, what'd you say? And he walks up to me. He's like all aggressive. He said, you heard what the fuck I said. So I just pushed him. And he flies back. And he goes, oh, hell no. Hell no. And he goes, and he picks up this wet floor sign. He comes in and goes, and I didn't think he's going to do it. And he whacks me on the head with it.
And you stumbled?
And not only did I stumble, but then he tackles me. We go flying back into the salad bar, and we break the salad bar. I swear to God, we break the salad
what
bar.
What the fuck?
We start fighting, and then I start beating this kid's ass, and we end up outside, and I've got this kid, and I'm, like, choking him. And then he finally goes, all right. So I let him go. And then I'm just a disaster. And my girlfriend's
salad all over
my girlfriend's
crouton.
Crying. Like, what the hell's going on? What the hell's happening? What the hell? And I'm like, the restaurant's a disaster. I was like, I don't know. Let's just go. And so anyway, we left. And then later the police came and arrested me.
Didn't start it.
No. Well, apparently because I pushed him, I started it.
Yeah. Did he sue you?
No, they ended up dropping all the charges, but they did arrest me for it.
My God.
Yeah, and also because we left, they said we left the scene of a crime.
Have you ever told that story?
No, I haven't. Yeah.
I like that story. It's a pretty incredible story because you don't expect some guy a lot smaller than you.
Yeah.
Is gonna start a fight with you and hit you with a what is it?
It was like one of those yellow wet floor signs.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't even look like it would hurt that bad.
It was
bad.
So funny. He hit me like right in the corner. I actually had this big mark on my head.
Jesus.
And it was, but you know, some guys they got heart, and I didn't. It escalated so fast. I didn't
heart. Yeah. Maybe he was a little insane.
I think it was a little ghetto is what he was.
Yeah.
Just, you know, some kids from
he's
the ghetto.
He's not going to step down. They don't
just
step down.
He's not going to step down, you know. But, you know, I'm kind of the same way. You know, I'd rather not fight. I'm a peaceful guy.
Yeah.
But I will. You know, I will. I'll go there. But I'd just rather not.
It's a pretty amazing story, Rob. What do you think? Rob, have you ever been in a fight?
Not a real one, no.
what's a fake one?
I mean, when I was like a kid.
Like
a little
what?
Scuffle. I don't know, like the playground kind of fight.
Oh, the playground.
Like 10.
I've been hit a few times. I've gotten fights. I haven't won a lot of them.
Yeah.
A lot of hockey. But, you know, yeah. I had a big mouth. That was my sort of mechanism where somebody would pick on me and I would go and I'd say something real smart and they couldn't top it. And everybody would laugh, so they'd punch me in the face. Like, you're funnier than me. Fuck off. And they'd punch me in the face. Inside of You is brought to you by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. This is an amazing platform. I use it on both podcasts. It has worked wonders for me. It's so amazing how easy it is to navigate. If you want to sell products, t-shirts, soap scents, whatever it is, Ryan, you want to sell, this is the way to do it. You could see what your best seller is right there, analytics, how much you're making this month, what products are selling the best. It's really fantastic. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage, Shopify's there to help you grow.
Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered.
Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star.
Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way.
Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/inside, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/inside now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/inside. Inside of You is brought to you by Netflix. Battle Creek, Michigan, 1963. Kellogg's and Post, sworn cereal rivals, race to create a pastry that will change the face of breakfast forever. A wildly imaginative tale of ambition,
betrayal, and menacing milkmen sweetened with artificial ingredients. Unfrosted stars Jerry Seinfeld in his directorial debut. It features a supporting cast of comedy greats, including Melissa McCarthy, Jim Gaffigan, Hugh Grant, Amy Schumer, Max Greenfield, Christian Slater, Sarah Cooper, Bill Burr, and many more. Friday, May 3rd, only on Netflix.
Really, you're doing all this stuff in D.C. You're not affected by a dead body in the neighbor's lawn. You're getting a fight. You're bouncing. What was it the day you remember life's going to change now? What was that? Do you remember that day or days?
I remember the day I made a conscious decision to change my life. And it was a Christmas. And this is it's still even hard for me to talk about. I had two kids at the time. And I was like broke, man. I didn't know how I was going to buy my kids Christmas presents. And so I went to the owner of one of the clubs I worked at, and I asked him to borrow money so I could buy my kids Christmas presents. And I remember like feeling so ashamed of it and so and just worthless. I got to make a change. And that's when I decided to pursue wrestling.
Were you a drinker?
No, never. No.
Drugs?
Never.
So you didn't get in any of that stuff. That
no,
probably saved you.
Working out was my high.
Working out was your high, and you did it every day?
Every day if I could. Yeah, if I could work out every day, I would work out every
and
day.
And why? Why did you start working out?
I felt normal when I was in the gym. I felt good. It made me, I wasn't one of those guys, one of those Charles Atlas guys that people kick sand in my face, and all of a sudden I wanted to lift weights and be big and tough. I just, I was always athletic. I was always a muscular kid, but I didn't start working out till I was, in high school. And that's when I just, I don't know, man, something, I guess it was
just the feeling you got a high out of it.
It was therapy for me. You know, it just made me feel good. It was like, I guess, I could equate it to somebody who would sit down and talk to a therapist and work out all their problems. And that's what I did because I wasn't the type of guy who would just spill my guts. I wasn't the type of guy who would just dump my shit on the table and ask somebody to help me with that.
Are you still that guy?
Still that guy. Yeah.
Do you go to a therapist?
No, but I'm not against it. I believe in it. I have gone and talked to therapists. And I've tried to be better at communicating. My wife has a lot to do with that.
Like say what's on your mind, like now, don't hold it in.
I'm that guy, man. I just bottle it all up.
Something pisses you off and you don't say anything for weeks and then it bottles up with all these other things. Yeah, and all of a sudden, like, why are you so upset?
And then I have an outburst.
Isn't that, I think a lot of people do that.
Yeah. And I'm that guy. My wife always tries. And I always thought we have to find that happy medium because I am that guy. I'll bottle it up and weeks later it'll come out and it's just in resentment,
Why are we out of potatoes?
But my wife is, she wants to talk about stuff like now. She don't want to go to bed if we're having an issue. And sometimes I say, can we just let it lie for just a little bit? We'll talk about it, but not right now. And the reason I always say not right now is because if I start talking about it, I'm just very blunt about things. I'm very blunt.
You don't say
so
it delicately.
Comes across as mean. Yeah. I want time to think about everything and process everything so I can actually explain how I'm feeling and why I'm feeling this way instead of right there just throwing it out. So we try to find that happy medium, but she's she's working with me and I'm working with her.
I always say the wrong shit. Yeah. Rob definitely says the wrong shit. Right. Jonathan?
Not too much,
he says.
All the time.
He says the wrong shit.
He has no filter, man.
I don't have much of a filter either. I say things and then later, like, all of a sudden, like, a week later, you said this. I'm like, oh, no, that's not, I was just kidding, or I wasn't. But you can't, that's why maybe talking about it right at that moment. No, I'm sorry for making you feel that way.
Right.
But, like, when you wait things, when they fester too long, when it's a week, 2 weeks, and then you bring it up, there's no recollection. There's no true, you don't see things vividly like it was just happened. You start to think, oh, nah, you took it wrong. It's hard. You got it. How long do you let it go, man?
I think I'm one of those people, like, I'll say stuff, and then I'll think, I hope that came across the way I meant it to be. And then I'll obsess over it like for days. God, I hope I didn't offend them. I was just joking. I hope they got the joke.
Well, you picked a good profession to get into for something like that. Wrestling, it's like you say the wrong shit and you want to say the wrong shit. Man.
That was one of the things where I really struggled with wrestling to begin with was to speak at all. Like it was a natural, it was a phobia of mine, public speaking. I was terrified of it.
So you just thought being as intimidating as you can without having to say much.
Yeah, because I was always a physical person, and I knew I could rely on my physicality, and I thought I really wanted that to carry me through. But it was, you know, there came a point where, again, if I wanted to move up, I wanted to progress in my career, I had to be a well-rounded professional wrestler. Yeah. So, which means you have to start speaking, you have to start doing a little acting. It was my nightmare, man.
There's always a catch. You can't just be yourself. You got to become something else.
Yeah,
right?
And but my pacifiers were, and people always ask me why I always wore sunglasses and hats and stuff when I was, you know, in the ring doing promos, and that was my pacifier. I was hiding behind those
things. Hiding behind it.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And how you became an actor, which we'll get into. But
yeah.
So you're wrestling. Who were your wrestling icons? Like Ric Flair? Did you like Hogan? Were you like, who are you really into?
It's fun. My idol when I was growing up, the guy who I looked up to the most was not, you know, a common favorite, but he was the Warlord.
The Warlord. I sort of remember the Warlord.
And the reason I loved the Warlord is because he was the most massive human being I had ever seen at that time. He was just enormous. Like, I couldn't wait for him to come out because I just couldn't believe how big he was. And that was, you know, that's what I was just in awe of those big guys.
So you had to like Andre the Giant.
Yeah, but it was the big muscular.
Like
guys.
Andre was a fat, kind of a heavy guy.
Yeah, he was a giant.
But like, he was a
literally,
giant.
Literally,
but
he
this
was a
guy,
giant.
The Warlord, was just all muscle.
Just muscle, just massive.
Did you aspire to be him? Did you want to be as big as that guy?
When I first started lifting weights, I don't think I ever wanted to be that big, but I was always so long. You even see, I'm just gangly, I'm long limbed. I just wanted to be not so awkward, you know. I wanted to be more muscular and just filled out a little bit.
Right.
But never, you know, Mr. Olympia or anything.
So what got you into wrestling?
Desperation. I was, that's what it was, man. I was, that's why I told you I was broken.
But how do you know to, like, I'm going to go there?
Well, it wasn't that much that I was qualified to do at the time. And wrestling was really hot at that time, but they were also, there was a company called WCW that was offering open tryouts. So I figured, you know, I'm an athletic person.
I could figure this out.
I think I looked the part, you know. Yeah, I mean, this might be an opportunity. Let me go try this. And I went for the tryout. I paid to go in and try out, and they told me to, you know, they ran me into the ground, said, leave. You'll never be a professional wrestler.
Did they beat the shit out of you for those whatever?
Beat the shit out of me, yeah.
It's a painful sport. You know, because people talk about, oh, well, things aren't real. They're real when you get slammed on these mats, when you get thrown around and you...
Yeah, and that's why I don't, like, you know, I see why, you know, people would use the word fake, and I don't like to use the word fake, because to me that always translates into safe, and it's not safe. It's painful, and
absolutely,
it hurts, it's dangerous. So that's why I don't like it. But it is, you know, obviously it's entertainment, and it's predetermined. But
it's painful as shit.
It's very painful. I like throughout my career, I had, I think like 13 surgeries.
On what?
God, my biceps, triceps, back, hamstring, nose.
Are you fused?
Not fused. I had the laser surgery. They shaved it down. I broke my back in a match. I had issues before that, but it just put me over the top where it gave me scoliosis and my discs were just all kind of messed up.
Do you live in pain?
I had some fragments. Not at all.
You don't have any. I've had five back surgeries. I got a hernia to just get my neck. I'm a mess.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm always like, you know, my back's good now, but my neck's been really fucked up.
Yeah.
So,
that sucks, man.
And how's your testosterone?
It's good.
Levels are pretty good. Mine's a little low.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need to do something about that.
Yeah.
Are deadlifts good for testosterone? Squats?
I've heard that, you know, the better shape you're in, the more naturally it, you know, raises your testosterone. But I don't know what the science is behind that, to be honest.
I can't believe you're not in any pain for all the fucking surgeries you've got.
No. You know, I'm going in for another surgery. On the second, I'm going to get my knee scoped. I tore my meniscus about, I think, 3-4 months ago boxing. And it got so bad. I was doing this film, and it got so bad. I was like, man, I got to go get this checked out. And I went, got an MRI. They said, yeah, it's torn.
You know, it's funny.
Yeah, you got to fix that.
Stallone, who was in Guardians with us, we started talking because he's had so many back surgeries. He's like, yeah, you have back surgery. I'm like, yeah, no, I've had like five. I've had five back surgery. What do you? I go, my L4, L5, S1. Yeah, that's what I had. I got fused over there. Who's your doctor? And I said this guy's name. He goes, that's my fucking doctor. Are you kidding me? I'm like, yeah, that guy's an asshole. Like, he doesn't even call me back. Oh, you know?
You do a great Stallone. Dude, I can't believe how good your Stallone is.
Stallone was so much fun to work with, and he was so cool because, like, I had these dots on my face for CGI. I've told the story, but he comes up and goes, "Who are you supposed to be? Pippi Longstocking? What the fuck is this?" No, he was a treat, man. He was a real treat to work with. I had him sign my Rambo lunchbox, which we just talked about. How many lunchboxes do you have? And your first was Green Hornet?
No, my first was E.T.
E.T.
Yeah, my first lunchbox when I was a kid, or the one I remember the most, was Fat Albert. But then I have one of those.
I love Fat Albert. How many do you have?
I think I have like a couple hundred.
And where do you keep them? Can you walk into your house and see them all?
I have one, not really a man cave, but I got one room. It's kind of a geeky room. It's got all my superhero.
Geeky rooms.
Yeah, yours is way better than mine. I'm so jealous.
I don't know if that's true, man.
No, you've got like... Man, your house is amazing.
Well, Jonathan said you had lightsabers. How many lightsabers?
Yeah, I don't have them anymore. I downsized, and I have a smaller house now, so a lot of that stuff.
Downsized? You're doing more and more movies. It's not because of money.
After wrestling, I went broke. You know, I left wrestling.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I left wrestling. It was 3 years that I barely worked, and got hit a little bit from the IRS and just went broke. So I had to start all over again. Yeah.
What is that like? I mean, we skipped the whole wrestling phenomenon, which became huge. But, I mean, going from having money, being known, all this. How does that even happen? Like, people always wonder, how do they lose their money?
Yeah.
How do they do this?
Well, it's a whole different thing when you got a check coming in, you know, every week, and then all of a sudden you don't have anything coming in.
And you've been divorced a couple times.
And I'm still got all the same living expenses. I got people who are relying on me. And then the IRS comes and they want all your money, you know? So that's the way it happened.
And what's the mindset? It's like, how do you even wrap that around? What's the next step? You're like, I got to get a job.
That was it. And I never really stopped. I was constantly, after I left wrestling, I was on a mission. I knew what I wanted to do. And I pursued it. It took a long time. I had a hard time getting auditions. I couldn't get an agent. I couldn't get auditions.
Well, take me back a little bit, just in terms of the wrestling thing, because I think you go there, they beat the shit out of you, and then they said, you're never going to be a wrestler, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you said, most people would say, okay, you're right. Yeah.
No, it was a couple of days later, and that's when, Jonathan, he helped me out through that, and we started making phone calls to find different avenues into professional wrestling.
After they said fuck off?
Yeah, yeah. So that's what we did. I paid somebody to train me to be a professional wrestler. And about a year later, we called the WWE and they offered me a tryout. And then they offered me a very low-paying contract.
What's a low-paying contract for a wrestler who's just starting?
My contract was $650 a week.
And how many times did you wrestle?
It was training. So I was going every day. I was going to training, sometimes twice a day. But that's what I did. I went and learned how to be a professional wrestler. You know, we packed up, we moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and that's where we lived for 2 years.
And that's where it really started to happen.
Long after that. Long after that. You know, it was down there. It was, you know, a couple injuries and a lot of, you know, aches and pains. But anyway, 2 years later, I finally made it onto the road. And it was like this really horrible, horrible gimmick that they stuck me in. And I was still kind of lost. And that was when...
What gimmick?
I was, so there was this guy named Devon Dudley. He was doing this character named Reverend Devon. And he had this collection box where he was collecting money. So they did one episode where somebody stole the collection box. So now he needed an enforcer, somebody to come in and protect the collection box.
That was Batista?
So that was Batista. It was Deacon Batista. I came in, I had this awful suit, and I had this big chain around my neck attached to this big steel box, and I would come in.
Did you talk?
And no, I didn't talk at the time. I would come in and just collect money, and that was my part. That was what I did.
that probably started something, right?
Well, it did. It's, you know,
those little things seem to help, right?
The thing is, I was on television. I was getting television experience, and it was then a wrestler named Triple H, who took a liking to me, saw some potential in me, and came up with this this gimmick that would be like a click, and it would be four of us. It would be me, Triple H, Ric Flair, and Randy Orton. Evolution. And that's how Evolution was born. And I was the enforcer of the group. And it was not until even a couple years after that, or maybe a year or so after that, one night they really wanted to build Randy as kind of the future of that company. And one night we had teased a fight between myself and Triple H, who was kind of the head of that faction. And the crowd just lost their mind. They lost their mind. They were so into it. And that's where something sparked, I think, in Vince's head and said, I think we got something here. And that is actually how it all started.
And once you're in Vince McMahon's head.
Yeah, in a place, a very dangerous place
to be. It's a dangerous place, but a very good, rewarding place to be. Right?
Very, very. And I have, it's weird. Like, some people have had falling outs with Vince, and I have nothing but great things to say about Vince. I mean, he treated me very well, and we disagreed about a lot, but he was never against me coming in to have an argument with him. I think Vince likes to argue.
Did you yell?
All the time.
Like, you'd go in there and go, Vince, I'm not fucking doing this.
No, I didn't say that. I wouldn't say that, but right. I was always, if I had a point to make, I would make it, and I would be very strongly opinionated. And I think he appreciated that about me. And a lot of times, it just was what it was. I spoke my mind, and at the end of the day, he says yes or no.
I'm getting paid more than $650 a week. I can't do this. I can't afford anything. Jonathan wants cigarettes.
Right. Right. You know, I actually went to events like when I first started making money. It was the first time I bought my house in Florida. It was my first time buying a house. And for me, I'd come a long way from a poor kid in Washington, D.C. to buying my first home in Florida. And Vince's face lit up and he just said, a homeowner. He gave me a hug, man.
Isn't that extraordinary?
It was great, man.
To be able to buy a house.
For me,
especially
that was
where you came
like
from.
A dream
come on.
Come true. I just, owning a home was like, it's security, man. Every poor kid wants security. It's not a money thing. I think a lot of people get that confused. I think poor kids want security, man. A lot of people, they take their money and they do wrong things with it. But I think at the end of the day, security is the word that, every kid dreams of.
Having a roof over your head.
Yeah, a roof over your head, a place to be, food in your mouth,
Yeah. So now you're done with wrestling. You say, I'm done with wrestling. The IRS comes in. They take everything.
They took a lot.
They took a lot. So how do you rebound? And you decided at this point you want to be an actor?
No, I left wrestling to pursue acting. It was intentional. I left on good terms. I gave them plenty of notice. I didn't walk out. I let my contract run out. And I left with a mission to get into acting.
Well, that's taking a chance, isn't it?
It was taking a huge chance, but I'll try to make this super short, but so I left because I felt like I was on top of the company. I was on top of the company. John Cena was on top of the company. We were the two guys that were headlining every show. And at the time they were doing a lot of movies with John Cena. They were doing a lot of commercials with John Cena, a lot of magazine covers, everything with John Cena. He was really the face of our company, which I got. He just fit the bill. But I felt like if I wasn't going to have the opportunities within the company, like acting, doing films, that I should have the opportunity to go outside of the company and audition and try to get, jobs in acting. And they said, no, we need you here to headline these shows. You're our intellectual property. This is where we need you.
What's pissed you off?
Which pissed me off. So that's what I did. I said, well, then if you're not going to give me, I should have the same opportunities as everybody else. If you're not going to give them to me within the company, then I should be able to go outside of the company. If I can't do that, then I'm just going to leave. And so I let my contract run out and I left.
Did you inadvertently, do you think you like in retrospect sort of resented Cena because he was getting all this? Like it's one of those kids that in high school that's like getting the popularity and you're like, fuck, why is she going out with that guy?
No, I didn't resent him because I am a big believer in opportunity. And I think if somebody is given an opportunity and you don't take it, then you're a fool.
He had to take it. Of course.
Yeah. That's why we're all there for opportunities. That's why
that's maturity, I think, to think like that, because that's how I feel. It's taken me time to think that. I'm sure when I was younger, I was like, why is that guy fucking doing? Why am I not getting a? But and then you realize, hey, man, I'll make my own shit. I'll do my own
that's
shit.
That's what I mean.
Good
yeah.
luck to you.
Somebody Best gave him that part.
Right.
If he doesn't take the opportunity, then he's an idiot. So anyway, I just wanted a fair opportunity. I wanted the same opportunity as everybody else. If I'm headlining shows and he's headlining shows, but he's gotten all these opportunities, I want the same opportunities. If you're not going to give them to me here, then I will leave.
And they thought you were bluffing, didn't they?
They really did.
They really thought you were bluffing. Was there a time when they came, Vince said, hey, come on, you're not going to really do this, are you?
Yeah.
And you said, yeah.
Yeah, it was the day before I walked out.
The day before he called you?
Yeah, no, we talked in person.
Was it not good?
Well, here's the thing. He had, at that point when I was leaving, he had I told him, you know, we talked about the films, and he was going to give me a chance to do a film with them. And I was like, great. But they had taken my idea, which I pitched to them, and turned it into this really awful idea. So I wasn't excited about it. The day before I was leaving, he said, I don't feel comfortable giving you this film, not knowing that you're going to be here to promote it. And I said, you have my word. I will come and promote it. He said, still, you know, I don't think so. I think we're going to give this film to Triple H. And I was like, okay, I understand. And I think he was expecting an anger, you know, an angry reaction from me. And he goes, I just don't get you. And it's at that point, it was just too late. I had made up my mind. I was focused on other things. I knew where I wanted to go. And so it was just too late. And then he hit me with, where else are you going to make this kind of money? And then I was like,
you believe in yourself. That's it.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was it. And I knew I was going to hurt. I loved those checks coming every week. I mean, it was great. It was really, again, security. But, you know, at that point, I had my mind made up. So that's what I did. I starved for 3 years. And it was actually after I got Guardians that I felt like, well, now I've kind of proved my point. I did what I said I was going to do. And I want to go back and do some wrestling.
That's incredible. And I'm sure there were moments where you were like, what did I do? I should. Did you ever feel like calling Vince during those 3 years?
No,
or was it,
not
you're too
once.
Prideful, right?
And I don't know, man. I just believe. And there was a few friends that I never forgave who had that conversation with me. What the hell are you doing? You need to go back to WWE, man. You're blowing it. Because they didn't believe in me.
Ugh,
that dude right there is the only one who believed in me.
Jonathan, sitting across in my massage chair that's not even plugged in. I apologize for it not being plugged in. It's giving you. You can plug it in, by the way, if you want a massage. It's over here. You sure? It'd make a noise, though. It sounds like a vibrator. I don't own those, by the way. Yeah, it would change the whole interview. But so you've known him since you're 18?
Yeah, yeah.
And he's been with you every step of the way?
Yeah, every step, yeah, yeah.
So he's the, see, that's
like
the
to the point of like loaning me like lots and lots of money to get me through, to carry me through. That's like we said, those 3 years where I was starving, that's how I got through. He just helped. He just filled in the blanks for me.
Dude. All you need is one friend like that.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, I got a friend like that who's been with me. You know, he's one of those guys who just like, you know, he's always been there. And I saw that he was in trouble once. And
yeah.
I've known him 33 years. And I mean, it took everything for him to accept money from me.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, I don't want your money. I go, listen. Just And finally he took it. 3 months later, he paid me back with interest. That's the kind of guy he was.
Yeah.
True friends, true love, true like, hey, I'm with you, man. I want to do whatever it takes. I've been there. I will be there. And it's rare, man. It's fucking rare.
So and even if people like, you know, even if he hadn't been in the position to help me out, get me through like financially,
mentally,
he still always believed in me. If I said I wanted to do this crazy thing, he was like, yeah, yeah, you can do it. You know, it's not even my mom. When I left wrestling, she said, you're crazy. what are you doing? You know, yeah, no, she just, yeah.
It's hard to say, oh, they don't have my back. They don't believe me, because I'm sure they do. But really, when I told my parents I wanted to be an actor, they were like, are you out of your fucking mind? Because 99.9% of people don't work. Why are you doing this?
Right, right.
They don't know. They didn't know that I was going to be successful.
Right.
And so, as much as they want me to be successful and go, God, I hope his dreams come true. I hope this happens. But deep down, they're saying, yeah. Never going to happen.
Yeah.
People in my hometown were like, Rosenbaum's never going to do anything with his life. He'll work at a fucking grocery store his whole life. And I did for 3 years. He'll work at Sunoco Gas. That's Rosenbaum. He's not going to be a successful actor. And it's hard to get that mentality. You still think like that. Oh, they're. Sometimes you go, I think they're right. But look at you. What do you do? It's this weird thing that you just don't lose. But okay, so. This is such a great story. You should do it. You should do a movie about you.
And it'd be weird.
I think it'd be a great story. The young they did it with Howard Stern. Well, you know, I could just imagine right now. So it opens up with some dead guy on the fucking picket fence, and everybody's around there. And your mom's like, "I can't believe you're not even affected by this." I'm like, "Well, we're not related to him, Mom. Why should I feel so? Because he's a dead person, Mom. We're gonna go out and go. I can't believe it. We're moving from here." And I could see the story. Let me write it. I'm gonna write the Batista story. It's a story about your life.
Yeah.
It's a great story.
I was actually just, yeah, I did a book years ago. And
you're saying, like a John, he's like, hey, man, that's a pretty good opening.
I was thinking about doing like a follow up to that book just because it's, yeah, I did it in around 2006. And it was really about growing up in my wrestling. But I've done a lot since then, good and bad. I mean, had good times, bad times. So I was thinking about doing a follow up book. Yeah.
book. I'm talking movie, baby.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
We should talk about it. People are going to be talking about it now on this, after this podcast. So Guardians of the Galaxy, how do you get the balls to go in and audition for this? Because when I watch these movies, by the way, that laugh is so – that laugh to me made Guardians of the Galaxy 2. I called James Gunn, the director, our friend, and said, Batista steals the fucking movie, period. They're all great. Batista steals – I know. Isn't he great? No. He's like – when you laugh – it's, I'm telling you, I just started, you just make me laugh hard. You're so funny. And I'm like, this is a guy who never wanted to act, who hid behind sunglasses and a hat on stage, who didn't want to talk, who doesn't love publicity, who just wants to be himself, monotone, opposite of me. And yet, how is he, I don't know anybody who could play that part.
Yeah. You know,
did you audition for that?
Well, it's a little bit of a story. But anyway, I had gotten an agent like a week or two before the audition. And this is a guy, his name's Brett Nordsberg, but he actually turned me down three times before. But anyway, we kept running into him. We ran into him like everywhere. He had so many conversations with Jonathan and myself. He said, you know, I really like Dave. I really like to help him. So a couple weeks after that, he... found out about this audition for Drax, and this is how he built up my hopes.
Drax the Destroyer.
He goes, now, I don't want you to get your hopes up, this, you know, because it's a real long shot. There's a lot of names auditioning for this.
It's a major motion picture, Dave. You're not going to get this.
Yeah. He said, but I had to fight really hard to get you this audition. So he built me up for that, and I went in and met with Sarah Finn, and she was amazing, man. She was just, because I was so nervous.
You met with Sarah before you saw James.
Yes, I flew out to L.A. for this audition. And I was absolutely terrified. And Sarah was like, take your time. So just relax. You know, just take your time. We're going to do it a few times. So we do it however you want. And she was made me feel so comfortable that anyway, I banged out this audition.
How many lines did you have in the audition?
It was a couple scenes. Yeah, it was a couple scenes.
Do you remember the scene?
It was one where I was talking about my wife and daughter being killed. It was an emotional beat. And there was another one where I didn't get originally the orb wasn't the orb. It was something else that they were, I think because the sides, you know, they're not the real sides.
Right, right, right.
So they described it as something else. But it was like, I didn't really get what it was. I was taking it literally and she asked me what it was. And I kind of explained to her back in a very bad way what something was. It was just one of those, you know, where Drax thinks that it takes everything literally. That type of scene.
And how did James react when you went in the room?
So she calls me later after the audition, and she says, would you mind staying in town to come back to read for the director? And I was like, no, of course I'll stay. And then that's when it became real.
And so you went in there.
And I didn't sleep that night before. No. I was terrified.
Were you still on book? Did you still read this?
No, I had it.
You had it memorized?
Yeah, I had it.
Did you go over it a million times?
I did, and it's because my acting coach came with me and really kind of coached me through it and encouraged me through it. And we worked really hard. So he would make sure that I actually went in for even the first audition completely off book, just prepared. So he stayed with me. He babysat me through the whole process.
Yeah, but he wasn't in the room with James.
No, he wasn't.
He let you go.
Yeah, he let me go and went in. And James, you know James, dude. Oh, he's just so right off the bat, I just clicked with him. And he just made me feel super comfortable. And
how many times did you do it?
We did it a few times, and then we auditioned there a few times, and then I actually came back a few times after that.
So you came in a couple of times to get
I think like four times, yeah, through chemistry tests and auditions. Yeah.
And did you know you got it on the last time when you walked out?
No, we thought we just to the last minute, because they wouldn't exclude, like, it took 3 months. This was 3 months of waiting, because they wouldn't exclude me from the part, but they wouldn't give me the part.
And I'll tell you what they were thinking. They were thinking... you know, he's the part, he's good, I mean, he gave a great read, he's this, you know, but he's a wrestler, and I don't know, are we going to have, there's so many things I'm sure that they're going to, is he too this, we need a bigger star, we need this, we want an actor, is he going to hold us up on set?
Yeah.
All these things that they're fucking talking about, and James obviously is going, no, this is the fucking guy.
Yeah, James was, he was very supportive of me, and I think he was vocal about it, but I think originally they were really against having a pro wrestler play this part. And I know that is for a fact because One of the producers actually talked to me about it.
Well, it's a good thing you quit pro wrestling at the time.
Yeah, and he just said, you know, and he actually apologized. He said, you know, you were the right guy. We had, you know, certain stereotype in our head, you know, at first. And he just said, you apologize. I'm sorry we ever, you know, made that even an issue.
Remember the time you got it? Do you remember the call? Who called you?
Yeah, I called, my agent and Jonathan called me, and I was driving down the street. I was on my way to the gym, surprise, surprise. And I broke down, man. I broke down, drove home, and was just in tears. Walked in the door in tears.
Tears? Hysterical?
In tears. And then to my wife, and said, I got the part. Yeah.
And then you both cried.
We both cried. I'm about to cry
the
right
dog's
now.
Think crying.
About
it. Are you? It changed your life. See, now you're going to get me upset. You fuck.
It literally, when I tell people that, it's... really hard for them to grasp, but it didn't change my career. It changed the trajectory of my life.
That's amazing. And I love hearing this. And it couldn't happen to a better guy. I mean, you're really some guy who has evolved but always kept who you are. That's never gone away.
No, I don't ever go away. I think I was just, you know, I had developed my character well before I got in this business or entertainment period. So I just I was developed as a person, yeah.
And now you got all these movies. You're offered movies all the time. You've done a lot of movies.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what it is, man. I'm still. And I use this term a lot. I say I'm not really. I care less about being a movie star. I just want to be a good actor. Like I really want to be a good actor.
Do you take classes still?
No, it's weird. I talk to my coach a lot. We stay in touch. His name is Joe Ackman, and he's a very close friend. I love him to death.
I think I need to call him. Jumpstart my career here, Rob.
But we have discussions. I don't really go and work with him anymore, only because I'm working so much. So I feel like I always say that I'm an on the job learning actor, and I feel like I come off every project a stronger actor, and I take away something from every director and every actor that I work with.
You get nervous?
I'm terrified. Yeah.
Still. Do you still get nervous every day you're filming?
I'm a take 10 guy.
Really?
That's when I get, I can
you shake zone the jitters. In, you let it go?
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't sleep before you shoot? You get nervous? You're thinking about stuff?
So it depends. Sometimes I get worked up about certain things.
Like what? Like I gotta be good. You still feel like you have to prove yourself?
Sometimes when I put a lot of stock into certain scenes. And I just want them to, I think it's just a pressure that I just want them to be as good as they can be. And you know how sometimes, you know, you're just, I did this just a couple weeks ago. I had this really, really emotional scene, but I was in such a great mood. I was like having such a good day. I was like, I didn't know if I could get there, you know?
Yeah.
And it just, you know.
You should have had that guy come up with the wet sign and smack you in the fucking head. That would have done it, right? Sometimes flashback. You just need a smack, you know, Jonathan with the sign. Yeah. Remember this, fucker? Yeah.
But, you know, just, you know, things like that, man. So I get, you know, worked up.
And, you know, working on a movie, it's like, and I know James, he likes to do a lot of takes.
Yeah.
So when you're first working with him, you're like, am I not getting this right? Am I not doing this right? Why does he keep doing this? Are they going to fire me? Did you ever think stuff like that?
Not with James, because he's very... I mean, he's very communicative. Really talks to you, and it's not a rare thing for him to come out and say, "You're killing this! You're killing!" You know how he gets all worked up and he comes out and he's all excited.
Yes, that's it. Yes. He just gets really excited. Yes. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I know where I'm at with him. I know where I stand, and I love that about him because even when stuff's funny, because you can hear him laughing.
Yeah.
He loves laughing.
He's got the microphone,
his own
right?
Jokes. And he's also, I love the way he just spits out, you know, alts. He just starts spitting them out and you just keep it rolling.
Say this.
Yeah, I love it. So I always get immediate feedback from James, which helps me a lot.
Yeah. Who is your favorite tour? I mean, it's hard to answer that because you work with all these guys.
Right.
But who is your, who are you closest to?
Actors?
Yeah.
Well, I think Guardians for sure. I think
I mean, who out of the cast? I didn't say that.
Oh, out of the cast. Well, I guess when I'm on set, I would say Pratt, but it's weird because we don't really talk to each other a lot when we're not filming.
Right.
We text each other every once in a while, but I think I bonded with him somewhat. You know, it's a weird thing because when we first got to London to film the first Guardians, and he was a big star at that point. But not like he is now.
Right. Now he's just gigantic.
Now he's like one of the biggest stars in the world.
And the nicest guy.
Sweetest guy.
See him
guy.
At the counter all the
sweetest
time. He's
guy.
Like, hey, dude, what's up? I'm like, no, you're a sweetest huge movie guy. Star and you're really cool. That's cool.
Right. But at that point, he didn't, you know, he had gone to London. He was by himself and I was by myself. So I think we bonded a little bit. But also, I think I interact with Palm really well. You know,
yeah, and Karen, those scenes with her.
And just, Karen.
Karen Gillan, who I just
Karen's
had
my,
on.
My buddy. I just love
she
her.
She loves you.
I love her, man.
How long were you in? I mean, you answer this. This is a question. Jonathan's like, oh, here comes the question. How long have you been? How long are you in makeup during the show? First movie, you were in a lot longer. They made
a lot
it
longer,
better, right?
Yeah. I was like 4 to 6 hours on the first film.
I mean, how do you do that? Were you going crazy?
So, yeah, no, not at all. You know, it's weird. I because on this, by the time we did the second film, I think I would have gone crazy. I don't think I could have done it again.
What did they get it down to?
To an hour and a half.
You went from 6 hours to an hour and a half?
It's a completely different process. And the reason is they knew how to do this process on the first film, but they couldn't figure out how to get it off because they would have to take it on and off every day and it would just eat away at my skin.
Wouldn't people have to go, I heard that they'd go in a sauna with you at night?
I do. That's how they figured out that they could, that's the way they figured out to take it off. I go in a sauna and they start to melt it off before they actually start applying the chemicals.
So how many men... Is it men?
Yeah.
So it's how many men go into a sauna with you at night?
Three.
Three men. Are they in? Are they yeah. close to nude?
Yeah, way more nude than I care for them to be. Yeah.
Right. And they're in there. And what do you talk about for an hour where they take your suit off? And are you naked under there except for underwear? Right.
Yeah, I wear swimming trunks in. Yeah.
You have
yeah.
swimming trunks.
Yeah.
And they peel you off, and you're like, "Hey, yeah, yeah. so how was your guy's day?
Yeah,
this is great.
That's the thing. We're so bonded at this point.
You just love each other. You don't care.
There's nothing we couldn't talk about.
There's man. One. I bet there's some rules though. You can't fart. None of these guys can fart in a sauna. That's disrespectful.
I think you know it's weird. It's an. I guess it's an unsaid rule because we all just have a lot of respect for each other.
But I'm sure there's farts that were saved in that suit that are trapped in there.
There's,
that
well,
when,
there's
you,
always,
when you rip it off, it's always. Like, oh, what was that? Oh, that was from 6 hours ago.
Yeah, I just
I had a scene that day.
I'm sure, you know, it's one of those things. Even if one of those guys had ripped one, I mean, I wouldn't give them hell about it. You know, it's just, we're so bonded, man. It doesn't matter.
Oh, man. This is fun. I've had a blast today, you know.
Yeah.
How long is Karen in the trailer for? Gillan, who plays Nebula.
She is in for much longer than I am, and she has had, like, on the last couple of Avengers and Guardians 2, has had it the worst.
I have
so much respect for her because as no matter, you know, how much sleep she gets, no matter, you know, how hard it is, she's always the same person. She's super bubbly. She's nice to everyone.
She is.
I've never, ever once seen her in a bad mood.
Have you seen people lose their shit on set?
Oh, yeah.
You won't say who?
You know, I won't say who because just because I don't even care enough about them to put their name out there.
Right.
But I've even had a couple outbursts.
Right.
You know, there's been a couple times where I've
what
just
What bothers
been,
you on set?
When I get hungry. I don't like being hungry.
I don't either.
I make it very known that that's... I don't require much, but just keep me fed.
What happens if you say, I'm hungry, and an hour goes by?
Yeah, no, I won't let that happen. And there was a point in my career where I would have let it happen, but now I won't let it happen because it gets to the point where I go and I wait. And if you don't say anything, you know, if you don't say anything,
I don't
somebody
want to be dick. I don't want to say anything. I'll be yeah. fast. Now you're like, I have to, cause this is changing.
Now I'm just getting, now I'm in a bad mood.
Nicholson,
it's
day 18 of The Shining. I'm about to fucking knock through the door with the axe. Get me a fucking sandwich.
Right.
Dave, darling, if you don't get me a goddamn sandwich, right?
You're really good at this, man.
I know. I'm like a Buddy Hackett. It's like a regular Buddy Hackett. Yeah, I was a loser in high school. I used to sit up on the weekends and memorize people's voices and do impressions.
I don't have any of those talents.
You don't have one impression. You don't know one impression you can sort of do.
I don't do. I can't do impressions. I'm not musical. I can't sing.
Everybody could do a walk.
But I want to do all those things.
I could teach you how to do a Christopher Walken. Here, try this. Your son. That you're already almost better than all the other Walkens. Your son.
I know the scene. I'd love to remember.
Your son, fuckhead that he is.
Right.
And that bitch who a girlfriend, they took my narcotics. Now I know you know where they are, so tell me. I would sit in my room for hours.
Really
but you
great.
Could do it if you listen, if you were a loser.
That's one of
like
my favorite
me.
Movies, by the way.
Yeah. Isn't that the best?
I love Tony Scott films, yeah.
The best.
Tony's the best, yeah. Was the best.
Well, oh, yeah.
I'm so heartbroken that I never got a chance to work with that guy.
Yeah, brilliant. But you're going to work with a lot of great directors. Yeah, you already have, right?
Yeah.
All right, we got some questions here.
Yeah.
Last questions here. Sean Ward, you should ask him if he's made any headway on trying to get the Gears of War movie made with Marcus Fenix.
Yeah, no.
Do you want
that's
to?
That's your Universal's 73. Fault. That's Universal's fault. We've been knocking on their door for years about this project, and it just has gone nowhere. Our last conversation with was with a producer named Dylan Clark. You know, I think has still got Gears, and we still regular calls and see where it's at, where the script is. But it's just, I think there's just, they've had issues with, you know, getting the script, which is, you know, maybe a good thing because they want it to be right. They're putting some stock into it. And if it's just not right, they're just, you know.
So it could happen.
It could happen. I think it will happen. I don't know if I'll ever be a part of it, but I will beg and plead and scratch and claw and try to make my way.
Carol Meza, Carol Lim S underscore S. If you weren't an actor, what would you be up to right now? Ooh, that's a tough one after hearing this.
I mean, if I wasn't, I'd probably still be wrestling. Yeah.
If you didn't have any desire to act, you'd wrestle.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I loved professional wrestling. I miss it all the time.
Ian, Geek for Hire, at MayClem72, what role from movies you enjoyed in your youth would you love to have played?
God, in my youth.
It's got to be a Star Wars role for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, if it was Star Wars.
Yeah, I was thinking like in the 80s, like that time during my youth. But yeah, no, I mean, God, Star Wars still, I mean, another series of films that I have begged and pleaded to be a part of.
Yeah, me too. I said I'd be a fucking extra. I'll be a stormtrooper that no one sees. just let me do anything.
Yeah, it's like,
well, anything.
Yeah, no luck.
I think that's pretty much it. Let's see. Will we get a Rock and Dave Bautista movie, Gandhi Boy 8? And do you want to win an Oscar someday or be nominated? Would you like to do something serious like that?
You know, it's weird. I don't really put too much stock into awards because I don't need accolades, but what I want is that Academy award-worthy role, which is not easy for me to get because I look like a gorilla. Those roles just aren't there for me, and I would like that role. I want to test myself.
Would you do a TV show?
Yeah, I've been trying to get on TV for years.
If I brought you something, I'm just saying, hypothetically,
yeah,
it was like a drama.
No, I've been pursuing TV for years. And
you'd love to do something like that.
Yeah.
Something cool, Netflix, HBO, something. Whatever, right?
Yeah.
You seem pretty open to that.
We've gone, had all those meetings. We've been in pursuit.
You'd be great.
And I love the idea. Because I like working. I like working. And I miss TV, to be honest with you.
You'd be a TV star instantly, don't you think, Rob? Instantly, Jonathan. You get a TV show, that's it. You're going to be... I mean, I just could see that easily. They just have to find the right thing
for
you.
We've been in pursuit, and we've had some good talks with Netflix, but it's just... we actually had this project that we brought to them. We thought they might love, but they weren't crazy about it as a series. So we've gone more towards a feature with it. And we'll probably get it made, I think, within the next couple of years. It was originally called Body Bags. Now it's called Dogtown.
Nice.
But I think we'll get it made. It's a great story. It's a fun story. Dark, comedic, drama, and action.
What's next?
So after I finish the film I'm on now, which is Stuber.
Who's in that?
Me and Kamel and Johnny. And there's a lot of great, you know, Betty Gilpin's in it and Mira Sorvino's in it. And
this has been awesome, man.
Thanks, man.
Look, to me, this is one of my favorites. You know, I've always loved you. You're a good guy. Thanks for opening up. Thanks for allowing me to be inside of you, Dave.
Thanks for being inside of me.
And when you become a big, you're already a movie star, but when you become a big TV star, will you come back? You got to come back and chat with me.
I want to move in. I want my own room here.
You like this house.
I love this house.
Dude, you can stay here anytime you want.
You don't know. You have to see my house and see how much I'm actually into this. Like, this is...
In Tampa.
Yeah, in my house. Like, you have my dream house. There's two houses.
Buy it. Buy my house.
Dude, don't ever sell this place. But there's two houses I've ever been into that I was just in utter awe of. And one is yours. And the other one is a buddy of mine named CM Punk. In his house, he's got this building in Chicago that he bought. It's just,
yeah, I don't have a building. Freaking incredible. I'm not that rich.
And he's got all this stuff too. He's got like wrestling memorabilia and superhero memorabilia. He actually wrote a Marvel comic for a while. He did the Drax.
Oh, really?
And he's a buddy of mine from wrestling. Just by coincidence, he ended up getting this. Yeah. So he wrote Drax.
But that's amazing. Well, hey, I'm not even kidding. I'm not here a lot, but I have guest rooms. You ever want to crash here and not spend the money in a hotel? You just crash here. I'll give you a key. Why wouldn't you? You like your privacy, don't you?
No, I don't feel like I wouldn't have my privacy here.
You would. You'd have your whole floor. Jonathan, you got your own bedroom. Would you ever go back to wrestling?
Yeah, I tried to go back last year, and it's just because, I never felt like I wrapped up my career, and the last run I had was really just bad. I butted heads with the company a lot over creative issues. And it was just not good, and I had to leave. Right when I finally started to hit my stride, I had to leave to go promote Guardians. And I just felt like I never really wrapped up my career.
That you'd like to
I'd
go.
Like to leave the right way. I just feel that, you know, there's an uneasiness about the way I left. And I just, I hate ending my career because I had a great career.
Yeah.
I had a great career. And the WWE was, you know, it changed my life, man. And they took me around the world and just opened all kinds of doors for me. And I just really like to wrap up things the right way there.
Well, you know, sometimes in this always becomes therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And I always imagine, like, if I was your therapist for this last hour, what I have gathered from the, and what you have gathered from me, if you were my therapist, what would you say? So I'm thinking, I look at you and I'm like, this guy has been through it all.
Right.
You were poverty stricken as a kid. Your parents got divorced. You were on the streets. You were fighting. You were bouncing. You found wrestling. Then you found you just kept pushing yourself and kept moving, even though you faced a lot of adversity. But it's like you seem to just have your shit together. Like, you know what you want, you know what you want to do, and you know who you are, most importantly. So if I was your therapist, I'd say, really, fuck, don't do anything. You shouldn't be in this therapy session. That's kind of what I'm saying.
I think that's it. I think somewhere later in my life, I'm still learning things about myself, but I think somewhere later in my life, I became comfortable with myself. You know, I accept my awkwardness.
How? What year was that?
Oh yeah, no.
I know. How old are you?
You know, it wasn't that long ago. I'm 49.
You're 49.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm 46. So I'm hoping I start to figure this shit out. You're my therapist now. Talk to me about that.
No, and I think it might have been within the last 4 or 5 years where I just became, you know, okay with being kind of weird, you know, awkward.
Weird's okay.
Different, yeah, different and not trying to be somebody I'm not.
You know? Do you think you stress less now? You just kind of go with the flow?
I don't know if I stress less. You know, I think I thrive off my stress. My stress is a good thing. You know, it's not a bad thing. I don't look at it as a negative thing. I think it's me wanting to achieve more, to be more, to, you know, do more, make something out of my life, make it mean something, you know.
Purpose.
Yeah, I want to have a purpose. Jonathan and I were just having this conversation. I don't understand who people who can wake up and just float through the day without a purpose, without wanting to contribute something to life. You know, that's it. I want my life to have meant something.
That was as about as profound as you can get. We're going to end there.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks.
That was awesome.
Yeah, thank you, man.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.